This is Bird Note. Quite a rhythm, huh? It might not be your average call for either a hawk or an eagle, but it's the distinctive call of the ornate hawk eagle. It's obvious why these birds have such a flashy name. Their dark brown plumage, adorned with striking white and chestnut patterns, along with their impressive size, gives them a regal appearance that sets them apart from other raptors. Their impressive crest looks like an elegant crown in adults and a punk hairdo over the white-headed and black-bodied juveniles. Aside from their looks, they're also skilled hunters. Ornate hawk eagles have been known to capture prey twice their own weight. They hunt great-gutta sows, big pheasant-like birds that can weigh more than 10 pounds, while ornate hawk eagles weigh less than 4 pounds. These spectacular birds can span their wings to about 4 feet across and can be seen soaring in the morning skies of tropical forests in lowlands and foothills from southern Mexico to northern Argentina. Ornate hawk eagles are also devoted parents. The female lays one or two eggs. Both parents take turns incubating them and raising the next generation of fashionable raptors. For Bird Note, I'm Lucina Melesio.
Wow. The ornate hawk eagle. What a name and what a creature. Amazing. Before that Bird Note, you heard Umbigazé with their track Photograph here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. It's just quite frustrating, very frankly, to hear, to listen to the speech or parts of the speech. Okay, how am I going to say this? Basically, you know, Canada is having a moment right now, right? Mark Carney's speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos went viral. I would say mostly parts of it went viral. I would not say the entire thing has gotten traction, because people have been clipping various moments in his speech to turn it into something. And that something is like praise for Canada to stick it to the man, to the US, to note that American hegemony is a thing and will one day be a thing of the past because the US empire is collapsing, and that Canada and the middle powers should unite together and create a more rely on multilateral relations rather than solely relying on the collapsing US empire. So a lot of people are praising Canada for calling that out, for making note of that. But then they're also praising Canada, or praising him for talking about how the middle powers have been quote-unquote complicit in the ways that the US has kind of just been able to call the shots and do whatever they want in order to prosper. That is no longer a viable nor sustainable economic model, he mentions, and so on and so forth. To contextualize my personal interaction with Carney's speech, I listened to the clips that went viral on Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday, I spent a little bit more time listening to the entirety of it. And what has gone viral are, I think, maybe like just really quick little clips of a much longer speech in which he discusses how Canada's economy is going to prosper and how it has been prospering under the current Liberal government and the current neoliberal way of doing things. He has, or the Liberals essentially have cut income taxes. They have invested in defense. They have invested in technology and so on and so forth. And therefore, and this is really the point of his speech, with given all the things that he says, if we're going to make multilateral relations, if the middle powers are going to shift the way that they develop their economies by not relying on the US, hey, Canada is a really good country for you to be investing in. We are very highly educated, and we are super rich in resources. I don't know about you, but personally, that is a source of concern. It really reinforces the frustrations that I've had with a lot of people who are really applauding Mark Carney for the parts of the speech that have gone viral, and the perception that he's calling in Canada and the rest of the middle powers and calling out American hegemony. And that seems to be it. Essentially what he is proposing with this speech is not, it's just not new, right? It is still about profit, and the way to do so is to exploit the land, and the way to do so is to invest into a military industrial complex, and the way to do so is to extract knowledge from people. A lot of folks seem to think that Mark Carney's speech is really radical because they think that he's calling out a system, but the system that he is proposing remains the same. It's simply that, you know, we might have different players in it, or their players are just more involved. It's still all settler colonialism and labor extraction and imperialism. And what the entirety of his speech, the reason why it concerns me, right, is because I recalled when I first heard it on Wednesday, the thing that I thought about was like, okay, one, obviously, like, Canada, you cannot call yourself complicit, only complicit, because Canada has a colonial history and also a current colonial reality. Very shortly after Carney entered office, Bill C-5 was being like rushed through the House of Commons, right? Bill C-5, according to Amnesty International, encourages the fast-tracking of infrastructure projects without safeguarding Indigenous people's right for free, prior, and informed consent over development proposals that affect their territories. The right to free and prior informed consent is enshrined in domestic and international law, including the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This legislation gives the cabinet the power to designate projects such as ports, pipelines, and dams as being in the quote-unquote national interest, allowing them to speed through or bypass environmental and consultation regulatory processes. And that, you know, is a really big, it's a very big red flag for with concerns to Indigenous rights. I think Carney got into office in like April or May. This legislation, Bill C-5, was passed at the end of June. And notably, from the BC Assembly of First Nations, in a document called Communique. Oh dear God. It's okay. English and French are colonial languages. I don't care about how this word is pronounced. Communique to First Nations, Bill C-5 overview and discussion. And section B, the background, the document notes, on May 23rd, 2025, Canada sent a letter to First Nations and certain First Nation organizations to quote unquote consult and cooperate on the development of Bill C-5, giving only 7 days to respond. The text of Bill C-5 was not shared at that time, just at a high level summary of its proposed content. On June 6, 2025, Canada tabled Bill C-5. On June 20th, 2025, Parliament passed Bill C-5. On June 26, 2025, the Senate passed Bill C-5. As of the date of this communique, Bill C-5 is only awaiting royal assent from the Governor General and is expected to pass into law tonight. I mean, given the context of all this, I think you would understand, you know, why actually what Carney was saying at the World Economic Forum, one, is contrary to the reality of Canada as a quote-unquote complicit actor. In fact, Canada continues to do things that are proactively... Canada continues to be a leader of bad things that happen to the land and people. But at the same time, it is also a huge cause for concern, right? When this bill is able to get passed and it just allows for any project to begin development on lands that are stolen, unceded. And I mean, that's just like within the borders. That doesn't even go on to highlight like the other actual horrible trash stuff that this country gets involved in. For example, like dumping its waste to countries of the global south, which violates the Basel Convention, an international treaty that Politico says is designed to reduce the flow of waste from wealthy nations to poorer countries. Canada actually signed on to the Basel Convention. But for whatever reason, continues to be involved in this literal years-long dispute, quote-unquote dispute, with the Philippines because our country is constantly getting rid of our waste in the Philippines and in other countries of the global south. If you want to talk about labor as well, right? Because of course, if we're thinking about the Canadian economy, we got to think about the workers. This is something that I feel like so few people really know about. But in 2023, Tomoya Obokata of the Human Rights Council of the UN became the special rapporteur on the global scourge of modern slavery. And he visited Canada for 2 weeks. In this article by the United Nations, quote, Obokata called on the Canadian government to intensify its efforts to safeguard workers' rights and offer a clear pathway to permanent residency for all migrants, unquote, because essentially the migrant worker system that we have right now in Canada is so rife with abuse that it is, quote, a breeding ground for contemporary forms of slavery, unquote. And I mean, I personally, I do not know how so many people have not talked about this report. I feel like this was one of those things that I was like constantly reeling over in 2023. It was just like constantly thinking about this inquisition. But it's not a surprise, right? I don't think that it should necessarily be considered a surprise, because the ways in which newcomer workers are exploited in Canada, even, I'm going to be very real, even if they hold permanent residency, so even if it were a more safeguarded level of status in Canada, it's garbage. These working conditions are garbage for the vast majority of newcomers who work in Canada. And when you don't have status, it just is just rife with exploitation. It's also really important to mention in this report that Obokata says that the highest risks of those who are at the highest risk of contemporary slavery and exploitation are those who are already experiencing structural discrimination and violence, including individuals with precarious migrant status, indigenous peoples, those with disabilities, individuals of African descent, former prisoners, and the homeless. And he also talks about how Canada needs to have full decriminalization of sex work in order to prevent further abuses around anti-trafficking legislation that targets sex workers and their human rights. This targeting of, in particular, sex workers who are not being trafficked, actually ends up having a very real negative impact on Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people who go missing or murdered, often as a result of being trafficked or forced into labor or sexual exploitation. I mean, all of this is just really quite horrifying, is it not? Given also the fact that Canada has just laid off literally tens of thousands of federal workers, and is also, Carney is also conveniently investing heavily into AI, you know. Where is this underdog that's punching up, that the world is lauding, claiming to exist? Again, this is not meant to be an episode about doom and gloom, but it is meant to reorient the way that Mark Carney's speech has been received by much of the rest of the world. And I haven't even talked about technology yet, and the fact that the World Economic Forum was trying to discuss the role of AI in the economies of the world. And just last week, right after the WEC, the federal government laid off tens of thousands of workers. I guess to conclude much of this episode, after talking about horrible things, is that if it's true what Carney is saying, that we are entering a period in the world now where the system has been ruptured and the U.S. is no longer the hot bombshell in the villa, we have to build even stronger alliances and bridges of solidarity between those people who are the most marginalized and who experience the most violence and structural discrimination in the world. Between people who are colonized, those who are displaced, those who are living in the global south between workers, because the collapse of the empire is going to create a lot of uncertainty and shifts specifically for those who are the most marginalized. And it is very, very clear, at least to me, that the middle powers will not be realms of safety for those people. The middle powers simply want to continue what the empire has been doing, the main empire has been doing, but using a different network of alliances and strategies. And so solidarity is exactly what we need to make sure that the world does not become even more garbage for those who are the most oppressed and marginalized. Before I end off the show today, I want to really quickly talk about Bill C-12, because this bill actually is quite relevant to today's episode topic. And at the same time, I think that everybody, very genuinely, everybody who is concerned about human rights should be concerned about Bill C-12. This bill is dubbed the quote-unquote Strong Borders Act. It was actually known as a different piece of legislation before, called Bill C-2. The government kind of said that they would rework some things, and then they changed it to essentially Bill C-12, and as it turns out, it is still bad. It is still a big cause of concern. Essentially, what it claims to do, and Amnesty International puts it best, it claims that this bill was made to in response to concerns coming from the U.S. about things like fentanyl and firearms. But the problem is that it includes all sorts of provisions that have nothing to do with appeasing Donald Trump in tariff negotiations. Instead, it attacks refugees and migrants' rights and the privacy of everyone in Canada. C-12 essentially allows for the government to have the authority to mass cancel permits for entire groups of people without due process, including permanent residency applications that are already in progress. As Migrant Rights Network puts it, quote, migrants could lose status overnight with no legal recourse. C-12 also creates a one-year refugee deadline, making it so that anybody who comes to Canada for over 1 year cannot claim refugee status, even if their country suddenly, abruptly becomes dangerous after they have come to Canada. And furthermore, according to Migrant Rights Network, this would apply retroactively to everybody since June 2020. This is in direct violation of international humanitarian law. C-12 is also a blatant attack on privacy protection rights of migrants. Under this piece of legislation, any personal information of migrants can be shared unfettered amongst all levels of government in Canada, essentially allowing the state to expand its police powers. Finally, another cause of concern is that, according to Migrant Rights Network, C-12 eliminates U.S. border exception. So previously, migrants crossing from the U.S. between official ports could apply for refugee status after 14 days. As an aside, in my opinion, this has issues in itself with regards to protecting refugees, but that's for another day. Anyways, back to Migrant Rights Network. They say that Bill C-12 removes this completely, trapping vulnerable people under Trump's xenophobic policies. The uptick of blatant xenophobia and racism in Canada has not gone unnoticed, and unfortunately, most people are more willing to blame newcomers and migrants rather than actually focusing their anger and attention on billionaires and the politicians who are in their pockets. It is the wealthy and the powerful who want us to scapegoat migrants. It is the wealthy and powerful who want us to scapegoat newcomers. Conveniently for them, now senators will get to vote on whether or not this blatant attack on human rights, on the rights of refugees and newcomers to Canada, will be passed next week in Senate. I really do believe that Bill C-12 is an attack on human rights. It's an attack on refugee rights and newcomer rights. If you, like me, have been concerned with how in the past handful of years, political instability, humanitarian crises, climate crises, war, genocide, ethnic cleansing have displaced millions of people from their homes, if you are concerned with how the global south is constantly being exploited by the powers of the west, including the middle powers, as we've discussed today, and if you are also concerned with the uptick of xenophobia and racism happening in Canada, and also very blatantly elsewhere, I really think that it is worth your time to be concerned with Bill C-12. I encourage you to take some time to read about it. You can look up information about it on Amnesty International. There's also a great resource on Bill C-2 by the Canadian Council for Refugees, which was released earlier last year in June. And of course, you can go over to Migrant Rights Network at migrantrights.ca to learn more about Bill C-12. And please, 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 please urge senators to vote no on Bill C-12. Talk nonstop about Bill C-12 to make sure that other people know about it, know how horrifying it is. As you know, I don't think Canada is a perfect country. I don't think any country is the perfect country. But there are a myriad of reasons why people come to Canada. Let's make it so that their lives can be easier when they get here. Let's make it so that they do not have to fear for their lives, for their safety, for the safety of their families when they get here. Once again, Migrant Rights Network is your friend, migrantrights.ca. There's great information about Bill C-12 or on Amnesty International and many other great resources. Go check them out and tell your senators to vote no. With that being said, I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Consider this not to be an episode of doom and gloom, because there are courses of action that you can take. Let us try to sow some seeds of hope for the future and for everybody who is simply a working, living person in this world. A bit of one last track for you now then, as we close off the show, by Marie Davidson off of her record City of Clowns. This is Validation's Wait, here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thanks so much for tuning in. I've been Leslie, and I'll talk to you very soon. Third modality.